What should we talk about this week, man?
I mean, I'm sure Facebook did something bad.
I want to talk about Apple TV Plus for a moment. It's a big week for TV Plus. Oh, kind of no joke, but like, you know, this way it is a joke. So are you familiar with Long Way Up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. This TV show on Apple TV Plus. This week I upgraded my motorcycle from a Honda Rebel 300, which is a very small engine, to a Harley Davidson Softail Fat Bob, which is for the comparison of the engine size is 300cc to 1750cc. So big jump there.
And I like the name. Yeah. Cat Bob.
Yeah. Yeah. Fat Bob. And it's my first Harley and I'm, couldn't be happier. And there's in the, so I live near Biloxi, Mississippi, and in Slidell, Mississippi, which is about 45 minutes or an hour away, they have the Live Wires to test ride. And I have an appointment to test ride one.
And the Live Wires are the electric ones they use in
exactly
the show, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And
nice, seeing to give it a go.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. And the other thing is, I think this may be a first for Apple TV, but there was a, remember the sticker I had on my MacBook that I, you don't know the sticker itself, but that I had a sticker on my MacBook before I had the display replaced and it came back stickerless. I thought about replacing the sticker, you know, ordering it again, but that was, you know, would take a while. And I had another sticker that was, it was a Long Way Up sticker. And I had another one that I was using just like on a phone case and it went fine on the MacBook. And I thought, oh, this is it for me there. So there's that. I've got like a different Long Way Up sticker on my MacBook. But because I was buying my first Harley Davidson and I really love the franchise, you know, the Long Way Up franchise, I've watched like over and over since it came to Apple TV Plus to completion. Like this is great for the background. I got a new tattoo. So I've got six tattoos and number six is based on the sticker that I had, which is just a really cool outline drawing of the Live Wire with a rider on it. Like sketched, just like line art sketch kind of thing. And, last night, because it was the night before getting my first Harley, I've wanted to do this before. And this was like, the motivation was like, okay, now's the time. So I went and got it. And so I think it may be the first Apple TV Plus base tattoo. I don't know that for sure, but that's where I'm going here.
Now that is some good merch.
King, I'll never lose it again. What did you got for us this week?
Yeah, just before we get into the obvious, which we will cover in extensive detail, I'm sure, there was this kind of funny thing that was running concurrently to the event, which is a Black Hat basically ransomware group that try and extract money out of all sorts of people. These are the kind of groups that, you know, they hack cinemas, they hack hospitals, they do bad stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they've hacked Quanta, which is Quanta Computer. That's one of Apple's primary suppliers. They make like some of Apple's laptops and stuff. And they're currently trying to blackmail Quanta for $50 million.
Worth it.
Basically, so if, and they said by May 1st, they're going to release documents every single day until the fine's paid, right? And the fine is like, most of the documents are just like, engineering schematics of all sorts of products, but they do cover Apple products. And one of the things they've already released is a schematics for the just announced iMac, like the brand new iMac. You can see all the internals, you can see everything there. They supposedly have stuff on an Apple Watch as well, which if they do release, it'll be quite interesting because the Apple Watch is rumored to get a bit of a redesign this year, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's what Quo said before. But one thing that has actually confirmed is that now we've actually been able to have a look at the stuff that they've released in previews, right? Obviously, we haven't paid them $50 million, but they've been doling out a few PDFs here.
On the web, yeah.
And on the dark web, I had to – it's really weird. You have to download this like completely alternate browser. You have to type in this literally like 32-character alphanumeric string of random characters, and then you basically end up in like what looks like Firefox. But we found this picture basically that shows – the 14-inch MacBook Pro, so the one that's going to come out in the fall, the, you know, the Apple Silicon MacBook Pro equivalent to the 16-inch one that I'm very excited to buy later this year. And there's actually like a drawing of it that shows HDMI, USB-C, and SD card slot on the right side. And it even shows the MagSafe connector on the other side for the power. So if you want more corroboration from like Quo, you know, what Quo said at the beginning of the year, there's literally now a picture of it. And it seems pretty official. Like everywhere else on the page, it says like Apple Inc. is, you know, proprietary, Apple Inc. private. And it looks the real deal. Like it's pretty cool. Like, and it was just a crazy adventure into the old dark web.
We just for the record, we don't endorse, pulling a ransom or anything like that. What they should have done is if they want $50 million, they should have just started an Apple blog, you know, put up some ads, get some sponsors and just like have a bunch of exclusives or something. Because like, what I mean,
maybe Quo makes his reports based on Quo or someone giving him these documents before.
He's the ransom person.
Yeah. So, maybe there'll be some more cool stuff coming out from, you know, if assuming Apple or Quanta doesn't pay the stupid ransom, maybe
why would
some
they?
Other cool leaks out. Yeah, I mean, if you pay the ransom, you're just inviting more hacks to happen, right?
Like, and they just
you don't
want
to pay the you don't want to pay the burglars to get your stuff back because it just encourages them to do it again.
That's right.
I mean, I didn't like it. We didn't do anything unethical. We just went to a website and there were screenshots right there, but. That's how I told it to myself anyway, as I was downloading this incredibly sketchy browser that was probably mining Bitcoin on my computer at the same time.
Yeah, but, you probably got that, what is it, Silver Sparrow now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I always think, like, is this a staged leak, you know, like a planned leak to signal something before an event or, you know, about a product before the announcement, you know? Obviously, the Quanta hack and the $50 million ransom is not a staged leak. But if you didn't know the source of this stuff, you'd just be like, oh, Apple signaling that they're going to have you know, some really cool notebooks. Like they're reminding us of that because this event, we're not going to see that. So
it's really funny. Like, obviously, what they must be hosting this on some like single server somewhere in, I don't know, China or something. Because you like load up the page and it takes about 10 minutes to load like the blog homepage, right? And then there's probably about 30 images on that page, and each image takes, I don't know, a good 10 minutes to load. You're just sitting there for so long. It's like, oh, there's a picture of the iMac we've already seen. There's a picture of the iMac we've already seen. Half an hour later, oh, look, there's a picture of the MacBook Pro that we haven't seen before.
Well, you know, ignoring any ethics, good job on your reporting here.
All right, let's talk about the Apple event. Let's start with our first out of the show, ExpressVPN. If you're browsing the dark web now, I probably shouldn't advise that. How do you choose which internet service provider to use? The reality of the matter is you might have very little choice or no choice at all. In most areas, ISPs are monopolies and sadly take advantage of their customers. Have you ever wondered why internet access is now available at like $30 or $40 a month? It's because ISPs like Comcast and AT&T are making money off of you. ISPs log your internet activity to sell that data on to other big tech companies and advertisers. Protect yourself with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is the best way to make sure that 100% of your data is encrypted and not available to prying eyes. So download ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/happyhour today. It's just a simple app for your computer or your iPhone that encrypts all of your network data, and it tunnels that encrypted data through a secure VPN server. It means the ISP in the middle cannot see any of your activity. It's all encrypted. Just think about what your ISP could see, because we spend so much time online. Every site you visit, every game you play, videos you watch, messages you send. This information is harvested and sold on for additional and admittedly creepy monetization purposes. Use ExpressVPN to hide your online activity. It really is that simple. I've tried it out. You just download the app, you press one button, and boom, the VPN's active. And all of your surfing can no longer be seen by prying eyes. And it's super fast. You can browse all over the VPN without a noticeable impact on your connection speed. And it's available for your phone, your laptop, but other devices too. It works on tablets, smart TVs. You can even set it up on your home router directly. Your data is your business and no one else's. Protect it at expressvpn.com/happyhour. Visit expressvpn.com/happyhour to get 3 extra months of ExpressVPN protection for free. Once again, that's expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more and sign up.
Okay. So the Apple event, it's amazing how they start these events on time these days. You just hit the play button and they start.
What do you think? I was thinking about this, actually. What do you think Tim Cook's doing when the event's going? Does he watch along?
Sure, yeah.
Watching the stock price. He's sitting at home on his iPad like, oh.
No, he's wearing his Apple glasses and like looking at charts.
Yeah, he's already in the AR version.
Yeah.
I mean, they called it spring loaded, and I would say it was pretty loaded.
It was not a bummer of an event. It was satisfactory, I would say.
And more surprises, I'd say, in this event than any event we've had for a long time, just because they had a lot of random stuff that even if it was like smaller, it didn't leak out and we weren't like 100% it was going to happen. Like going into the event, the only thing that I was like is dead set certain was the iPad Pro, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously we did get that, but they gave up, you know what, like seven other announcements in the same show that just was like, wow, okay, they're actually doing this today.
Yeah, I think the one big surprise that we didn't have any lead on, I guess two things, the Ted Lasso trailer that we'll get to. the look of the Siri remote and then I would say the purple iPhone that we'll get to, but even like the first thing, the Apple Card family announcement that, you know, we reported on this coming, we just didn't know it'd be this event.
Right. And like the Apple TV, we've been talking about an A12 Apple TV for ages, but it was just like, oh, they're actually doing it today. Right. Like,
yeah. It's timing, but
yeah. So let's start from where they started. Tim Cook came out. It was, you know, it's Earth Day, actually today as we record. So he was talking about that, their environmental effort. They love to talk about the guidance to get to 100% renewable energy for their entire operations, business, products, and, you know, and suppliers by 2030. And then they swiftly moved on to the Apple Card family stuff. This is kind of addressing, and the Apple Card launch feels like ages ago now because it's like pre-pandemic, right? It was like August 2019. It was a long time ago. But when that came out, you know, it was pretty well received and people were getting along with it. But there were complaints that you couldn't have a joint account with your spouse. And if the husband went to work and then the wife at home didn't have direct income, the wife's credit allowance would be way lower because the algorithms were that way. And this is, you know, a fact of life with pretty much any credit card provider. But because Apple didn't offer a joint account system, it was like highlighted as, you know, bad, right? And they obviously addressed that here.
Yeah, Twitter user Duh brought this to light.
Yeah, Daniel Hanny Hansen from Basecamp definitely brought this to light, right? In very fruitful terminology. There was like a lawsuit that actually got resolved like last week about this, where it was basically said that Apple didn't discriminate, blah, blah, blah. They just acted like everybody else. But now they've actually come out with some features to accommodate the situation. They call it Apple Card Family. You can share your Apple Card with your spouse, your partner, or your children and apply spending limits. That works over family sharing, so you can do it up to five people and just basically give them a slice of your own Apple Card, either, you know, free reign by whatever you want, or, you know, you get £100 to spend for the month, or I guess it's dollars because the Apple Card's still US only. That's kind of what I was hoping when they were going to talk about Apple Card. I was like, oh, they're going to do it in other countries and other regions, but no, it's still US only at the moment. And then if you want to actually develop a credit history as a couple, you can set the Apple Card as a co-owner. So they have to be over 18. They have to comply with, you know, various rules and stuff. Like the sharing with your kids is you just let them do it. But if you actually want to have the secondary person in your house, so i.e. your partner, also accrue the financial equity, the credit history and the credit score, they have to be designated as the co-owner. And, you know, you get the good and the bad with that, right? Because then you're intricately tied together. So if they you know, take your account into credit, then you're affected too. But if you can show good spending history, then you get a nice you know, that's showed on your credit rating, and eventually they can get their own account if they want to and they don't want to be partnered up.
Yeah,
or co-owner.
Something that I got from this you know, the presentation is that the Tim Cook's walking around outside Apple Park, you know, a generous pace walk, and he's talking, you know, out loud, announcing these things in this pre-recorded video that was produced. But he presented it in a way that's, you know, obviously we were like, oh, this is a reaction to the DHH situation. But he presented it in a way that was like, this is the latest Apple Card innovation that no other credit card has ever done. And what an Apple way of presenting that you can now do, you know, have a family card and not just everyone has their own card, you know, but both partners have their own card. So.
Yeah, joint accounts exist, you know. I mean, the giving the like sub card off to your kid with an allowance is actually, you know, nicely done. You can just do it inside of Apple Wallet. You just give them a number and it just appears in their wallet app and you can manage it from your phone. And
yeah, that is cool. Like, you can already do with Apple. So if you don't have an Apple card, you can do Apple Pay Cash and fund your kids. You add them to, well, if they're in family sharing, and then you can give them an Apple Pay card and then they can use that in apps or in stores. And that's, you know, not going the credit card route. But this, I mean, since you can do that, then you really should be able to do it with the Apple card. So that's, what is that, available now? Available next week?
Yeah, it's part of 14.5.
Available in the second half of May.
You've got the theme of the event down right there. So yeah, that's Apple card stuff. It's cool. Apple doesn't always do a great job addressing, you know, that families exist, but this seems pretty good and it just integrates into family sharing. I hope they bring it to other countries. Apple Podcasts. Mm. So this was the second big announcement, fan. Also done by Tim Cook outside. Mm-hmm. They spoke about it for about, I don't know what, 60 seconds and moved on, but it was a pretty good, pretty influential stuff in here.
Yeah.
Firstly, obviously, they addressed that in iOS 14.5, the app's redesigned, it's got a better interface, there's new features for library management, and they're also widening the grouping of shows in the directory. So now podcast creators, if you're from a network like us, you can now take all of your disparate podcasts and make a channel that is like a nicely presented interface of an organization.
Yeah, because we do have like 10 podcasts in the network. Yeah, besides Happy Hour. Yeah.
And you can't actually, there's no way at the moment to like see all from the network, right? You can search 95 Mac, but then if you want to see like the Google podcast, you've got to know to search for their name. So what we should be able to set up now, and this doesn't require like a subscription or anything, it's completely free. You just group them together and then there'll be like a network page in the podcast experience where it'll have like the branding at the top and you can put like a description and you can show the latest episodes. And you can obviously just have every podcast that's on the site, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, nice feature.
The way it works right now is, so 9to5 Mac Happy Hour, the publisher is 9to5 Mac, and you can tap that like you're looking at an artist in Apple Music and then see all of the albums. You can tap it and then you can see all the podcasts, but it's just like basic search stuff. It's not, you know, pretty at all. And this sounds like it's a lot better.
And then the bigger part of this is the subscription audio initiative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And going into the event, there were discussions about this. This kind of leaked at the weekend, but it wasn't clear if it was going to be like, you know, Apple Podcasts plus originals or if it was going to be, you know, some kind of like Patreon model. I was assuming with no sourcing at all that it was going to be like Podcast Plus and they're just going to do some original shows.
Yeah, me too.
Because like, that's the easier route for them, right? They can just add more value to that accrues to the bundle or accrues to an Apple Music subscription, which directly goes up against Spotify, which is making, you know, a lot of hay at the moment that they have originals from, they have podcast originals from, you know, Joe Rogan and Barack Obama and all that stuff. And it's just, you know, it's a very well-known model. It's just like Arcade or TV Plus. Apple makes some deals with some publishers. They produce some audio at home that's quite cheap to make, right? Like in the scheme of things, it's a lot cheaper than making TV shows. And then they just release some as exclusives, and it gives reasons to use the podcast app and, you know, the Apple One bundle, the Apple Music bundle, whoever they sold it. That's not what they did. They might do that in future, and there's still scope for them to do that, but they're not doing that. That's not what they announced this week. What they have instead is basically a version of, like, Patreon podcasts, right? So, like, if you have a Patreon account on the web, you can subscribe and get, like, a private RSS feed with exclusive content or ad-free episodes, and they basically just built that into the podcast app. So, and it's opt-in, obviously. So you can choose as a network, you can take a show and you can say, we're going to offer a premium feed of the same show. You can have ad-free episodes. You can have early access to episodes before they hit the free feed for everybody. Or you can even have a archive option. So most RSS feeds only include the last like 50 episodes or something. I think Happy Hour has the last 100, but theoretically, as a premium upsell, we could make like the entire back catalog available to buy, you know, through the subscription.
Because it's no longer using RSS in this case, right?
Because it's no longer using RSS, exactly. Like, Apple hosts the audio, all the subscriber audio, Apple hosts the files themselves. They apply DRM to it, they distribute it, and they, you know, roll it out. It's not like the, you know, standards-based podcasting approach where we host the audio file on a server somewhere and the RSS feed just points to that server. I don't know what I feel about it. Like, I think it's fine. Like, I don't think it really attacks the essence of the podcasting ecosystem. I also am not sure how many people are going to adopt it overall. Like, we might adopt it. I'm not sure yet. Like, I think it's a clever idea, but there are some wrinkles in it that make it a bit, like, complicated. Like, there's no API to upload the subscriber audio stuff. So it's, like, more manual work for, you know, the editor or whatever. They have to go to some bad web app that Apple's made and, you know, add a new episode, add the subscriber audio at the same time as they release the audio into the feed. Like, it'd be a lot easier if Apple had just made like a podcast API so we could just directly integrate with the CMS. They haven't done that, at least yet. They should definitely think about that. And the other thing is, like, you are committing to, you know, giving Apple sole control of the subscribers, right? Like, because if they subscribe inside of Apple Podcasts, which is really nice and convenient because right beneath the follow button, there's just a subscribe button now where you can pay for extra content, you can get episodes ad-free. That identity of this person is a subscriber is solely encapsulated inside of the podcast app, right? Like, say if we don't offer any merch or anything like that, but say if we want to do something else like a Discord server or anything, that would be completely disconnected from the podcast subscription, right? Because we don't know who's subscribing. We just see the money coming at the end of the day, ultimately.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, people are going to do it. And if you're like an upstart podcast or you're just like getting started, it's like easy, right? You just press one button, you just start getting some extra money. You can, you know, give some people some stuff. If you're like a huge network, like the New York Times or like Relay FM or whatever, they're probably not going to bother with it because they already have their infrastructure set up. And if we did it, like one nice thing about the system is that it doesn't require exclusivity. So you can offer, you know, premium content through the podcast app and then also carry on offering your own membership program outside. So in that situation, it'd be like, okay, you know, if you subscribe to Apple Podcasts, you can get the ad-free episodes, but you're not going to get the other perks, you know, like a back-end Discord or something else, right? That if you were going to subscribe through a website. So that might be what some people do, where they just like say, look, if you want just the convenience of, you know, one button press to subscribe and support the show, do it in Apple Podcasts. If you want like the full membership experience, then go through our website.
You know what I want?
Mm-hmm.
I think just like a donate button with no membership. You know, you're
yeah.
Like, you're like, I like this. You know, I'm getting a good experience from this. Let me, you know, require Apple Pay, whatever. And that would be cool because it's a little more complex than just I want to support a show. It's a subscription, which, you know, we all love those. And then there's what do you get for it? And it's a whole kind of a separate thing to manage. So.
Yeah, like we're still thinking about it. Maybe we do like an ad-free version or something. But again, and the other thing is like, it'd only be available to people who use the Apple Podcast app.
I'm gonna do a mayo-free version of the podcast.
You just do it. Just do bonus episodes that are just you, and you just say everything I've said is completely wrong.
Do you remember years ago when I had like a really bad edit, like a really bad audio recording, and I re-recorded my whole track?
Yeah, that was.
I would never do that again.
Yeah. You literally, it was like an hour and a half show, and you just responded to me on the recording for like all day long.
But I had to be really close to the original. At the time, it wouldn't work out. That was such a bad
idea. You pulled it off, so. Like, I don't know. I don't think there's any problem with Apple getting to this space. It's probably less egregious than something that Spotify are attempting to do because they're doing their own like separate from the world exclusive podcast with Anchor and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
and there's
everyone's going to do it. Like, this is Apple's version.
Yeah, there's a couple of surprises here. I mean, the first one you mentioned is that they didn't start off with their podcast, you know, evolution as having give Apple more money for our originals. They started off with the a thing that goes down a lot better, which is give your creators more money. Is there a cut at all? Does Apple take 30% or anything?
Yeah, they do.
Seriously? That was a joke.
No. I thought you knew this. No.
No.
It's the same as the App Store. So it's 30% for the first year and then it's 15.
Yeah. If you guys want to send money, I'll give you my Cash App or PayPal. Oh man. Okay. And the other thing is just much larger, you know, just bigger picture that this is the first big change to the Apple Podcast app in a long, long time. If you recall, Eddie Q said many years ago that new podcast features were coming, and I can't even remember what they were because it was so small. And like, this is the first big thing to come to Apple Podcasts in a long, long time. So good energy. And you know, it's not because Apple's just like all of a sudden, you know, 15 years later, or however long it's been since they made podcasts, let's do this now. It's not as competition based. So that they see what others are doing. They have to now, because there is competition from Spotify and others.
But do you think this really addresses the Spotify competition though? Because Spotify's like, you know, pay us and then we'll give you a whole library of originals.
Okay, well, I guess
you join the app and then you can pay this person $2, this person $4, this person $5. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I guess you could also say the competition there would be, you know, Patreon and all the other membership platforms. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but it's all like, what are other companies doing? Okay, and now we need to do that, because if it was just Apple and no one else was doing it, because I do subscribe to Patreon based RSS feed podcast. And it's an Apple podcast, so it doesn't take any attention away. But because Patreon does that, I think that there's incentive for Apple to now do a big change in the podcast app. Although the biggest incentive is probably, you know, the redesign especially, is that obviously they're going to begin selling shows in the future. So.
Yeah. And one other part to this is that now there's an option for podcast publishers like us. You can choose to hide your RSS feed. So, in like the podcast directory, which is like the service that all the third-party apps use, they basically just use the iTunes podcast directory, right, as like the canonical resource for finding podcasts. Well, there's a bit of an issue at the moment because there's a checkbox that says, make this feed URL private. And in the transition to the new podcast, you know, backend or whatever, some of those shows have been automatically turned to off. And so it's kind of broken a load of third-party clients at the moment. And even if it was working as intended, the UI for like a new person coming to the podcast ecosystem, they're like, oh, should I click this box or not? Like, it normally, when it sounds like you want to make it private, not public. But if you do that, you're like breaking support for all of the third-party ecosystem. This is just for like free RSS-based podcasts, none of the subscriber stuff. It's just like, oh, do you want to hide your RSS feed? It's like, why would you want to do that? I think the only reason that checkbox there is so Apple can use it when they make another Apple original and they don't want the podcast to be available outside the podcast app. They can just check the box. But
you have to make a mess kind before of a situation. You got to make a mess before you can clean up.
So yeah, exactly. That's what's happening. I mean, our show literally was unavailable on Apple Podcasts for a whole day on Wednesday because Apple still hasn't quite nailed the whole internet services situation. But yeah, this is cool. And all this Apple Podcast subscription stuff is coming, I believe, in the next iOS update, so 14.6. It's not in the current 14.5 stuff.
Yeah, and then they say May, so that's next month. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and you know who is good at internet service?
Who?
Mint Mobile.
Mint Mobile,
Mint
indeed.
Mobile, yeah.
After years of fine print contracts, you wonder, why are you choosing to get ripped off by big wireless providers? Mint Mobile offers premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. $15, you might be thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they're the first company to sell wireless service online only. They cut out retail stores, which means there aren't crazy overhead fees that they need to pass over to you. No mystery fees, just cheap service. Now, I know you've been using a Mint Mobile SIM, right, Zach, for a while.
Yeah. So both in the iPhone and the iPad, which is like the big secret for data. And they, Mint Mobile is a really good experience because, you know, A, it's super affordable, but B, they've got a really cool app where you can look at and see how much data that you're using. And so you can say, this month I want to crank it up, now I want to tune it back down. And it's really great. The service is often better than, well, most of the time is better than what I had before. And I highly recommend it. It sounds too good to be true. It is not. It's really good stuff.
So save money and get Mint Mobile premium wireless service for just $15 a month. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your existing phone with a Mint Mobile plan. That means you keep your same phone number and everything. Switch today, and if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile offers a 7-day money-back guarantee. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/happyhour. That's mintmobile.com/happyhour. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/happyhour.
Yeah, plus it's owned by Ryan Reynolds, a majority stake, so can't go wrong there. Deadpool. All right. So
there was the random iPhone announcement.
Yeah, this was an iPhone event for those who didn't know. And
it comes in purple now.
For the first time in a year, it is now a purple iPhone. So the iPhone 12 and 12 mini, so not the Pro phones, not the Pro or Pro Max, but the 12 and 12 mini, they've added a purple color too. And it, otherwise, it's just a new color option. That's all it is. You know, they used to introduce product red versions mid-cycle, and then red became available from launch, finally. And this is that same strategy where you add a new color mid-cycle and you hope to, you know, maybe bump up some sales. Only this time it's purple, which was in the 10R lineup. Mm-hmm. And so it isn't the first purple, but it wasn't an 11 that was purple?
No, it was an 11. Yeah. I think it wasn't in 10R, it was an 11, I think.
Okay.
Because if you squint, mm-hmm. the back of an iPhone 12 looks like an 11, right? Because it's still got the dual cameras.
Yeah.
And the 11's purple and this purple is slightly different. Like the 11's purple was slightly less saturated. Like it was more light. It was more lilac-y. This one's slightly deeper.
Yeah. So for anyone who's been holding out on upgrading from the 11 to the 12, you now can. Because it's purple. If that was your hang up. Looks good.
Yeah, the color looks nice. I mean, it is a bit awkward though that like now they do product red at launch. It's like, well, here's just this random purple color. Like when it was product red, it was more of a thing because it's like it's A, red's a cooler color, and B, it's supporting the charity. So doing it mid cycle just had a bit more of an oomph for it, like a justification. Whereas this one's like, if you haven't bought an iPhone 12 before Christmas or in the next 3 months, well, here's just one in purple now. Like what I mean? Like
it's a Mother's Day gift. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's around. IPhone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally market as this is the season for a new color. So if you want purple, you can get purple.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to change out from black to purple. I can all like black. Yep. But I'm glad it's available as an option. And that's coming at the end of the month, April 30th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But reviews are out today. And seriously, reviews of the purple color.
It's purple. I mean, if Apple sends you a phone, I guess you have to take some pictures of it.
No other iPhone color has had just its color reviewed, but purple. Because
it reminds me of the, do you remember the first Verizon iPhone 4?
Uh-huh.
And Apple sent them out to press, and it was like, this is the Verizon iPhone 4. It's the same as the iPhone 4. It's just now it's on Verizon.
And we fixed the antenna.
Yeah. Entirely new, though. Yeah. This is the good stuff.
Yeah, this is good.
AirTag. No plural. It's a completely different to the leaks. It doesn't have an S on the end. No, it's basically what has been leaked for, like 2 years, running on 2 years now?
Yes.
It's a circular thing that looks like a coin. It's got plastic on one side. It's stainless steel on the back. And it tracks whatever you attach it to, except you can't actually attach it directly because it doesn't have like a hole or anything in it, so you have to buy an accessory that you put the air tag in, and then the accessory is what clips onto your bag, or you could use tape, I guess. I've been thinking if I just get an air tag, I'll just like put it in the change purse in the wallet, like that little like zippy bit,
yeah,
and then it can track my wallet without me having to like buy an accessory.
Look, if you're doing it in a backpack, you can put it in the backpack.
And you can, if you put it in a backpack, you just like put it inside. Like, it's so, firstly, how much of a relief is it that this isn't like actually real now?
And only $29.
And both only
those
$29.
Things are reliefs.
Yeah, like, I was bracing for a $69, $59, $49, and they were like, $29? So I was like, I mean, then you have to buy, if you want to buy the Apple accessory, that's like, half of the Apple accessories are more expensive than the actual AirTags themselves.
Yeah, and they gave it the Hermes treatment too, which really brings the price up. So like,
yeah, you can literally buy a $400 bag charm for the $29 AirTag. Like,
it's a whole other product. It's Hermes AirTag. It's a whole other product.
Yeah, like they get like the Apple Watch. They give it a special engraving on the back, so you can spend $400 and you get an AirTag in some leather band. But
you better not lose it.
If you've got a $400 leather charm, you need an AirTag for the AirTag, you got to stack them up. Mm-hmm. Okay, so kind of cool. It has obviously, it has the integration with the Find My network that we're expecting. Mm-hmm. It has the U1 chip. It does have a beeper speaker in it. And the plastic edge, the plastic side, is what actually vibrates to make the sound. So there's not, so it's quite a clever little design. There's not like an actual like speaker inside the unit. It's just the plastic outer vibrates in a certain way to maybe go beep, 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 which is cool. Mm-hmm. You set it up like an AirPod. You just bring it near your iPhone. It wakes up. You have to assign a name for it, and then you assign it to your Apple ID. And that's because if when you put it in lost mode, it can then track back to your Apple ID if someone picks up and finds it. Like, so by default, you see the AirTag on the map based on it being close to a Bluetooth beacon anywhere in the world. Based on if you're in a place that's got any number of iPhone users in it, it's probably going to hit one of those and automatically appear thanks mm-hmm. to the network. Mm-hmm. And then if it goes, you can say specifically if you want to, I've lost this item. And then when someone picks up the AirTag, like a human picks it up, if they scan it to their phone, this can be iPhone or Android because it just uses NFC, it launches a web page, and that web page will say, this AirTag is marked lost by Zach Call. Here's his mm-hmm. phone number. Give him a ring and get it back. Right. Mm-hmm. If you don't put the lost mode on, they can scan the tag, but it won't tell them any personal information at all.
Right.
And it's all done over an encrypted end-to-end network, so there's no privacy concerns there. The locations are silently done on your phone and sent to the server or whatever, but even Apple doesn't know which AirTag is associated to which person because it's done end-to-end encrypted. So they've got that basis covered. Like, the Find My network is like COVID-19 exposure notifications. Like, that system is the Find My network, right? Like, it's anonymous Bluetooth identifiers that just get shuffled around the place. But whereas the COVID-19 exposure notification system kind of fails in the fact that you have to remember to download the application, set it up, and then it only works per region, et cetera, et cetera. The Find My network is on by default for all iPhones. So you've got like a billion nodes in the world ready to find little AirTags that have been misplaced and tell you where they are on a map.
Mm. On by default, I guess, unless you like decline location services and stuff like mm-hmm. during setup. So yeah, just to clarify.
Yeah, but there's not like an explicit, do you want to be part of the Find My network? Right,
right.
Like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. These, they look, the silver side looks pretty good. The white side is kind of blank, but you can engrave them with emoji or, characters like you can AirPod cases. But it still has the same problem for me as like the AirPod case engraving. And that's that there aren't a lot of them. It's limited in what you can do in terms of like the character emoji. Well, I guess like letters and numbers are pretty, you can do a lot of combinations there. You can do multiple letters, of course. But like the emoji characters are pretty slim. So like, one idea, I don't think you can do a backpack. I don't think you can do like keys as the logo on the emoji if you wanted to do that. So, I think that's something that's easy to improve on in the future if they want to.
Yeah. They actually did this with AirPods, right? Cause they launched the engravings, the new engravings, which are like bolder and thicker, right? With the bigger fonts. And then about 3 months later, they were like, they did a little press release. It was like, now you can engrave with the different icons. So they could do that again with AirTags too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I would be interested, I think, in putting like a motorcycle emoji on mm-hmm. and then like, having it embedded in the bike in some way that's like, not going to go anywhere. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah. And like, I might get one with like BM written on it, like my initials. Yeah. You can have up to like four letters, but if I want them as soon as possible, I assume the engraving shipping is going to be longer, so I probably won't bother. But, and they're only $29, so maybe I'll buy another one down the road. The other thing is, they last for a year on the battery that's included, and you can actually replace the battery. So you kind of like push on the back and twist it, and then it just pops out, and in the middle of the plastic and stainless steel is this little watch battery, standard battery.
That, yeah, coin battery.
So you can't replace the Apple Watch's battery, but you can get a watch battery for the AirTag. So you just get the little like circular little battery things. And
this is from learning lessons from Tile, which originally wasn't that way. And I think they eventually got that way from feedback from customers, because it was like once it was dead, it was useless. And this is cool. I mean, the most attractive thing is $29 mm-hmm. or four for $100. So then the 25 each. So.
Don't you think the four pack is like, because I feel like I'm not sure that most people will be able to find a use for 4 AirTags. Like, I can find a use for maybe 1 or 2. And then if they sold a 3-pack, maybe you'd be inclined to do it. But a 4-pack at $99, it's like,
I don't know.
I don't know if I actually want to buy 4.
Yeah, I mean, after the event, you know, I was excited because we got the announcement finally. But I was also thinking about what will I actually use this for? Am I getting it because it's new Apple tech? A lot of the ideas are just like, this is something I could do with it, and it would be in the Find My app. Keys would be important, you know, because it's for $29. I told the story before about like losing my apartment keys, and that was more than $29 to replace. So, I don't think I'm going to order any. I think I'm just going to, I'm not worried about engraving. So I think like once they're in stores, and not even like the Apple store, but like once they're in like Best Buy, then I'll just pick them up. But I don't want to stress about, I don't want to do like tracking on an AirTag or, you know, think about it that way. Just whenever they're convenient, because other people on our team will dive in.
Yeah, I'll order one of them for sure, just to play around with it.
Yeah, and your time zone, you'll get it sooner.
I can fake lose something. That's the thing ultimately with these products, though. It's like you buy it, you put it on your keys, and then you don't actually appreciate it until 8 months later when you can't find your keys. For the meantime, it's like, well, I've just got this little like key charm on my.
At least it has the speaker, though, so that makes it. Because if it was literally just like on the map, it wouldn't be so great. But at least it has the speaker.
And you can play about with the U1 side of it, right? Because that's like what gives it that little extra oomph. Because when you're in, so if you're not in Bluetooth range, obviously it's just relying on the last location reported to the Find My network. Once you get into Bluetooth range of the device, so about, you know, 30-40 feet, you can then enter what they call precision finding, which is the ultra wideband enabled experience. And that's basically what they've done it as, is you get like an arrow on the screen and it points left or right or straight ahead, and it says you are 20 feet away, turn 20 feet to the left, and you can find the AirTag. Yeah. And as you walk towards it, it gives sounds and haptic vibrations. And I saw in one of the hands-on videos that I think it was iJustine's video, because she has like a multi-story house, and she was 0 feet away, but on the wrong floor, right? And it actually came up on the screen. Your AirTag may be on a different level to you, so it kind of has some acknowledgement of elevation, which I thought was cool.
That's cool.
The UI is pretty, and like they do some cool stuff where like the circles kind of glom together to form the arrow, and
that's the main reason to buy it, I think.
Yeah,
for us, it's like a good user interface.
However, it doesn't look like what all the like leaks kind of suggested it would. Because you remember we've talked about before how there's going to be like balloons and like an AR experience. There's no AR experience.
Well, all the leaks were wrong.
All the leaks were wrong. Yeah. So what's interesting is the Samsung released their AirTags Compare like last week, and they obviously have copied the leaks 1-to-1, because they do have an AR experience which literally puts like a circle on the screen overlaid with the video.
Wait for the AirTag OS update.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, currently the AirTags don't do that. You just get this, like, you know, green overlay on the find experience. Precision findings obviously available on any device that has the U1 chips. That's iPhone 11 and up. If you don't have an iPhone 11, you can still use AirTags, but you only get the Bluetooth thing, or you can make it make the sound, right?
What's the cheapest Apple accessory for AirTags?
The cheapest Apple accessory is like $25. Which is $5 less than the price of the AirTag. Yeah. On the Apple Store, they do sell Belkin accessories, which start at
$12.95. Okay.
But the range of accessories on the Apple Store goes from $12.95 to $40. And all of Apple stuff is $25 and up.
Okay.
I think a complaint I do have is I wish, like, I know it's pretty in a nice little circle, but I wish they'd just put like an actual hole on the AirTag itself, because you have to buy a whole extra accessory just to get the hole that you can loop it through. Like,
that's
adding
the most Apple thing, right?
Yeah, like...
Like, Tile could get away with that.
Yeah, and all of the Tile's trackers are squares, but in the like corner of them, they have an opening for a hole.
Yeah.
And you just slid it on the hole. Like, I think the AirTags are cool, for sure. And yes, there's loads of like privacy concerns they've addressed for, you know, trying to stop stalking and stuff. Like, it will flash up alerts if it notices that it's traveling with you, and you can disable. And when we found that in the beta before, one question was like, if you're in an apartment sharing a house with someone else, is your AirTag going to constantly be beeping on their phone, like going, you know, you're getting tracked by an AirTag. Turns out that's probably not going to be the case because the user can opt out on an individual basis for one item safety alert for a tag. And if you're in the same family sharing group, it won't flash up. And if you're in the house at the same time as the tag, it will know that, like, you're not separated from the tag. Like, the owner of the tag's not separated from itself, so it won't do the beepy, chirpy alerting, which is quite clever.
Nice.
You get basic Android support for at least when the tags are found by doing the NFC thing. Obviously, you need an iPhone if you actually want to, like, register them and set them up. And they're available on April 30th, so you can order them tomorrow. I'll probably order one. It's $29, whatever, and then see if I actually have use for more of them down the road.
Yeah, tomorrow being April 23rd, 5 a.m. Pacific time, which if you're listening is probably today or before.
I wonder if they're going to sell out.
Yeah. Like on the map, they have a couple of different names, but on the Apple.com page for AirTags, they have Janina is the name of the person, and she has her keys, and her bike is a mile away, or no, 0.1 miles away, and then her umbrella is at another location on another street a couple blocks away, and then her backpack is on. She's there with her keys, but she's missing her umbrella, bicycle, and backpack at different locations. So she's having a great day.
So yeah, that's AirTags. Maybe in a year, I'll be glad I bought one.
That's true. A colleague of mine, Derek Wise, at our sister site, spaceexplored.com, he's going to do 3D printing and then share the files for, you know, a carrier, a holder for these things. So anyone who is, you know, a hobbyist 3D printer, if all goes well, then I think next month or so, we'll have files that you can download to print out your own, you know, accessory without spending the price of an AirTag on it.
Yeah, because I'm kind of on the hunt for the cheapest AirTag holder that gives you a loop hole that is as small as possible. Because a lot of the Apple ones, they're like designed to make a statement. So like you have like a leather tag and it like looks all fancy. I literally want like the smallest black plastic container that holds the AirTag inside it. I don't care about showing the logo or anything, right? Just a little circle that at the end of the circle, it puts another little circle, which I can snap on the keychain, you know? Like, I don't want any of this fancy fluorescent stuff. I certainly don't want the Hermes ones.
Yeah.
Just give me the smallest container you can give me. Basically, this is like the, you know, the Syracusan naked robotic core of the iPhone, but it's like, here's the AirTag. But because it's so small, any of the cases that you put on it, like double the size of the overall unit, right? Like, so that's why it's kind of annoying. But
of course,
Apple had to make a perfect circle.
So go ahead and get your 3D printer fired up.
All right, Happy Hour this week is also sponsored by Privacy. If you're like me, you log into your bank app and you check your statements every couple of days. You're slightly nervous about any weird or unexpected payments showing up on the account. Well, with Privacy.com, there's a better way. Privacy.com makes it super easy to manage your financial life online whilst keeping your most important information secure. Protect your card details and your money. You can decide who can charge your card, for how much, and for how often. So how does this work? Go to privacy.com/9to5Mac and make a virtual payment card. These privacy.com cards act like a proxy for your own debit or credit card. Rather than giving a shopping website your actual card information, use the information for the virtual payment card instead. And you can set who is allowed to make payments on each virtual card separately and for how much money. And then after you've made the payment with a website, you can just close and invalidate the account at any time. If you just want to buy something once and you don't want to have an ongoing relationship with the site, like maybe you just see an ad on Instagram for something cool you want to buy, but you don't know the website, you can just use a privacy.com to make a single use card that cancels itself automatically as soon as the first transaction completes. And if you want to keep tabs on your subscriptions and recurring payments, you can do that too. You can make what's called a merchant card that allows for repeat purchases, but only from the same merchant. So if your card details are stolen in a, you know, an online breach, no one else will be able to take out the money. You can also set explicit spending limits, so a service can't accidentally bill you twice in the same month or upgrade you to a higher price plan without your consent. So it's pretty cool. Privacy.com. Head to privacy.com/9to5Mac and sign up for an account to try it out. New customers will automatically get $5 to spend on your first purchase when you use our URL. So go to privacy.com/9to5Mac and sign up now.
That's awesome. I'm on my third debit card this year, and it's only April. So, you know, Apple Pay really hasn't solved this thing because it's not everywhere. As I say, also, we have a pretty good lineup so far of sponsors. ExpressVPN, you know, keep you safe. Mint Mobile, Stay in Touch, and then Privacy. That's really cool. I'm kind of getting hungry now, so I wonder what the next one's going to be. what else happened in this event this week? This was really cool. Tim Cook says, I think it's Tim Cook, says, we're going to talk about the Apple TV. And then they, you know, they moved to a Ted Lasso trailer, which is welcomed at this keynote. But I was thinking, I wonder if it's just going to be TV Plus and they're just being loose with the phrase.
Right. Yeah. When he said, let's talk about TV, I was like, is this going to be original TV or is this actually going to be the hardware? And they said Ted Lasso trailer. I was like, oh, I mean, I like Ted Lasso or whatever. And they said it was coming out July 23rd. It's like, cool, cool, cool. But I was like, okay, that's it. They're just going to do a trailer. Because like WWC last year, they just did the foundation trailer, right? And yeah. They moved on. But no.
They can do that again this year if they wanted to.
They could.
I'm not getting a Ted Lasso tattoo, by the way. So there's the trailer, which is in the TV app now as well. But then there's the Apple TV 4K, which is using the same product name as before, the old Apple TV 4K. What was it? An A10?
Yeah, it was A10X before.
Yeah, that's been discontinued now. And the new Apple TV 4K looks exactly the same, does everything exactly the same, but it has an A12 Bionic chip. And at least what that enables is 60 frames per second with HDR support. You can AirPlay from your phone. So you can take, you know, those HDR videos at 60 frames per second. And now you can AirPlay them to your TV. So your phone has the content, but only your phone has the content for now.
Yeah, because like no one else gives you 60 frames per second HDR video. Like none of the online streaming services do. Maybe it's an opportunity for, you know, Apple to release one of their TV Plus shows in high frame rate and have it, you know, look great on
Ted Lasso would benefit from those soccer shots.
Right, for real. Yeah.
Yes, like, serious. Yeah.
And that'd have been cool if, like, he did the trailer, he announced the box, and was like, yeah, you know, Ted Lasso, you can watch it in 60 frames a second. But they didn't actually say any of that. But
yeah.
Hopefully they have something on that in the pipes you can actually use it. Because, like, we were talking a couple of weeks ago when we were seeing in the code about 120 frames per second, right? And they didn't announce 120 FPS support today, but the port on this new Apple TV 4K is HDMI 2.1. So theoretically, it does support that speed, right? And that bandwidth.
Uh-huh.
And I was saying when we were talking about 120, well, you know, very few TVs at the moment that people actually have support 120, but basically all TVs support 60 frames per second. Mm. So if they can actually get some TV Plus original content out in 60 frames per second, it would immediately have a lot of people that can actually watch it and appreciate it at that speed. So
yeah, TVOS 16, not 15, but 16 will have 120 frames per second.
I mean, and that's precedented before, because remember when the 4K Apple TV first came out, Dolby Atmos wasn't available at launch, right? They were like, we'll give you Dolby Atmos down the road. And then they eventually came out with it. So them adding like weird tech spec features down the line is not a new thing when it comes to the Apple TV. But yeah, like it's an A12 Bionic chip, and then otherwise the box is the same. You get HDMI 2.1, you get Thread Radio if you want to do HomeKit stuff with Thread devices. Great. They still haven't really given a compelling story about why they're adding Thread Radios to everything. They've just done it. Because as far as I can tell, like the performance of a smart HomeKit accessory, whether you're doing it over Wi-Fi or Thread, is identical. It's just what it says on the box.
It's the big difference is once Thread's adopted by everyone, you'll no longer need to have bridges for translating the protocol. So like, for example, with the Lutron lights, you've got a Lutron bridge. With the Hue lights, you've got a Hue bridge. With IKEA smart stuff, you have IKEA's bridge. And if they were all Thread, they wouldn't need that bridge for translating.
But you can buy like standalone HomeKit like light bulbs today, right? Like,
yeah,
they don't all require bridges now.
They don't all, but they all use Bluetooth. If they don't require a bridge, they don't use Wi-Fi, I believe, unless they've got Wi-Fi in the bulb. But those are pricier. I guess
Thread's cheap and stuff.
Yeah,
and
Thread's the future.
It probably has like bigger rate, like longer range and stuff. And I think there's some limited ability to do like bunny hopping. So like the light can talk to, you know, something between if it needs to get through.
They can be threaded together like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think Thread is the basis of the
chip,
yeah, the connected home internet protocol thing.
Yeah.
So they're future proofing it, which is good. But
yeah. Because if they didn't have Thread, it'd be like, what?
You wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like the actual Apple TV hardware.
And now, and now the Apple Home strategy is totally clear, right? They've made Apple TV. No, seriously, like, I mean, we talked about this before on event day, but it at least does say we're not doing an Apple TV box, you know.
They're it's not like the smallest update they could do just to prove they're not going to discontinue it.
Yeah, but it has an effect. Like, I've you know, like, through separation, don't have an Apple TV anymore. You know, I left it behind. And I did I want to buy an Apple TV 4K in 2021? No. But now it's, you know, wait till it comes out and then I will buy it when it's in the stores.
Yeah, just talking about the actual spec, because the only spec that really has changed is the processor, right? So what's interesting is the A12 CPU is about twice as fast as the A10X's CPU, okay? So you're getting a performance boost there. But if you're thinking about, like, Apple Arcade games, the graphics processor in the A12 is the same as, basically the same GPU performance as the A10X is, because it's not the A12X, it's just the A12, right? So it's not the souped up GPU like the iPad chip, it's the iPhone chip, whereas the A10X in the old Apple TV 4K was the iPad chip. So you're not really getting a jump in graphics performance, you're just getting a jump in CPU performance, which, and again, like, the A12 is faster than most, you know, like the old Intel MacBook Air, right? Like, it's going to be able to drive a set-top box for years to come for everything as far as, like, video streaming and photos and music is concerned. But if you're looking for, like, the next generation of, like, Apple Arcade game console, you're not really getting it here.
Okay.
The other disappointment, because, like, I'm thrilled that they've released a new Apple TV. I've been waiting since 2015 when, right? And then 2017 came around, I was like, oh, I should probably get a new Apple TV, but they haven't come out with one. And then I was like, okay, I'll hold out. So now I can finally get one. I'm very happy about it. But what's going to sting is when I go to check out, they're going to charge me $179 for the privilege.
Yeah. I mean, at least it stings a lot less than buying an Apple TV 4K first generation, I guess we're going to say now, in 2021. You know, at least it's this better chip, and you got.
I wish they'd have put the prices down. Like,
yeah,
the
worst
thing
is
discontinue the Apple TV HD.
Yeah, the worst thing is that's still 150.
Yeah, it's still sold unchanged at 150. At, like, the bare minimum, they should have got rid of the HD and just brought the 4K to 150 rather than being.
But it does get the remote that we're going to talk about in a moment. But also the color balance feature. Doesn't that use the iPhone to, like, calibrate your Apple TV picture settings?
Mm-hmm. So that's a nice little feature.
And it works with all the Apple TVs, HD and 4K.
You don't need any of the new stuff. You just need a Face ID iPhone because it uses the true depth. I think it uses, like, the infrared lens or something.
Cool.
And you hold it up to the TV. It put, like, basically when you go into this color balance mode, the TVOS shows like a almost like the Time Machine. The old Time Machine UI where you had the, you know, the shooting stars, like it kind of looks like that. And then in the middle, there's just like this rounded rectangle, which is like, place your iPhone here. And then it just flashes all the colors of the rainbow at it. And then at the end, it will go, ding, we've color balanced your TV. But it's not color balancing the TV, right? Because obviously it can't change the settings on the TV. It can only change what the Apple TV outputs. So they change how the Apple TV sends video out to adjust to compensate. So the color balance will make looking through the Apple TV look better, but if you change input, it's not going to make any difference, obviously.
Yeah, it's cool, though. Like that.
Yeah, it's cool. And I think this is in the betas now, and if you have Dolby Vision, it just doesn't work, because I think Dolby Vision basically does the color correction part. Like, the part of the protocol of Dolby Vision is, like, the TV talks to the box and the box talks back, so it should theoretically already be calibrated, but if you're not using a Dolby Vision set or HDMI or whatever, then you can actually take advantage of this.
Dolby Vision to me looks gloomy. Maybe I don't have the right environment for it, but
maybe your TV needs calibrating. That's the actual box.
Yeah, the big hardware story with Apple TV is the Siri remote, which didn't go away or be renamed. It's the Siri remote. Looks a little bit familiar. Looks a lot new. Looks pretty industrial, I think. Doesn't look as sleek as any previous remote. I saw today that you noticed the screws in it. I definitely noticed those on the first day because it just looks – that's why I say industrial.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on in the Siri remote.
I think the Siri remote is fantastic. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not coming from the position of someone who was, like, up to my nth degree and super frustrated about the old one, because
right.
I kind of like the trackpad, but But other people in my family would get annoyed at the remote, like, constantly. And my mum thinks I, like, have a direct line to Tim Cook. She's like, just tell him to change the remote. So I can't,
you got to go back on CNBC and talk to Tim.
Yeah, I can't quite... I don't quite have that level of influence. So what I did, actually, was after the event, I just took a screenshot of the remote and sent it to her because I was like, do you like this? And she's like, this looks great. And one of the things she said was that I hadn't thought about is that now that it's aluminium again rather than black, it's easier to see in the dark because...
Yeah, I mean, the back side was aluminum, but not the front side. It was
right, yeah. And all the buttons on the old one are all black and everything, whereas this is now like a aluminium slab with black buttons. So
you don't need that ring anymore, the white ring.
You don't get the white ring, yeah.
Yeah, you don't need it.
Good for usability.
You don't need it, yeah.
No, like, this remote is like... It's basically a combination of the old Apple aluminium remote, right, the infrared one, and the Siri remote, because it's kind of combining the best of both worlds. It's bigger, so you can hold it in your hands. It's unlikely to get lost, right? It's just physically bigger and thicker. It's probably not going to fall down the sofa. They've given it a D-pad arrangement with labeled indicators, so most people that are familiar with every other TV remote on the planet, they can just pick it up and go left, right, up, down, and then click in the middle to select. But at the same time, they didn't lose the best bit of the old Siri remote, which is the trackpad. So that circular D-pad doubles as a touch surface, and you can swipe on it just as you do before. So if you want to zoom through a list on tvOS, you can still do it if you don't want to press the buttons. And the outer ring of the circular pad, you can also scrub through in like a circular motion, kind of like the iPod click wheel of old, right? And that just lets you zoom through a video or go up and down a list really quickly just by doing a rotational gesture. Yeah. So, and I don't want to toot my own horn too much, but I was basically campaigning on this show, put a D-pad around the outside of a trackpad. And they,
see, your mom's right. Yeah.
They kind of did it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I really like this thing. The silver and black design reminds me of the Mac Pro look, how that's silver and black, you know, the mouse and keyboard. The Siri button moves from, you know, a button on the top of the remote, you know, on the face of it to the side, just like on an iPhone. So if you're going to activate Siri on an iPhone, you're holding down the power button on the side, or now it's the Siri button. Same thing on this remote. So it's shaped like an iPhone in terms of it being boxy again, or boxy now. And then they've added two new buttons, power to turn your TV on and off without having to rely on HDMI CEC, which no one should rely on. And then they've added a mute button. So not just volume up, volume down. Well, no, was there even volume before? They've added volume.
Yeah, there's a volume. It was volume up and down.
Okay. Now they got a mute button. So
now they got a mute button.
Yeah. Very cool.
And they moved Siri to the side.
Yeah. So it seems like it's like an iPhone. So if you're using it, you know, your iPhone, you hold down the side button to activate Siri. And that's the same thing with this remote. You hold on the side button. So I think that's a clever way of carrying over the same kind of gesture behavior. And then probably most importantly of all of this is that because they have this like D-pad click wheel, it isn't just the top half or the top third or fourth is the trackpad. So you can pick it up from the top, not just the bottom, from the top without clicking buttons and scrubbing through stuff and moving things
and
around.
And it's asymmetric, right? Mm-hmm. So you can feel which way's up without having to actually like do something wrong first.
Yeah.
Because, like, the reason I got along with the old trackpad was that I'd pick it up gingerly by the sides. I just got adapted to it, right? And then you can feel, if you're really careful, you can feel the difference between the glass and the trackpad-y part. And then you know what to do. And you know, don't click down because that's going to do something. Just lightly rest your finger on the top of it. Okay, the controls have appeared. I know I'm on the trackpad part, right? This one, but that, like, that rigmarole, most people don't give two thoughts about, right? Like, and understandably so. This remote isn't just much more, like... They've made it uglier, like there's no question about that, but
yeah, it's functional.
They made it better before it, right? Like when they did this is like the remote version of the butterfly keyboard, right? Like they're like apologizing for 4 years of failure, but when they did the butterfly keyboard on the laptops, they just fixed it by putting essentially the old keyboard directly back on without any changes. What I do appreciate here is they have actually took what they learned from the Siri remote, integrated it in, given the trackpad functionality, as well as like in a design that should be more usable for everyone.
Right. And you can buy it on its own for $60. It comes with the Apple TV HD now. So which takes a little bit of this thing out of the price, but not a lot. But yeah, this is a winner.
The only thing that feels like a letdown is that it doesn't have Find My integration.
Yeah, well, I mean, even just playing a sound would be kind of cool. I mean, a little chirp.
Yeah, like just at least give it like what the AirPods have now, right? Yeah, where that you can just press make a sound and it just makes a little beeping noise. But
it is a little more of a chunk too, so it's not like the little sliver it was.
And it doesn't have any glass anymore. So one of the things that on my Apple TV tweet deck column that would come up constantly is people that drop them from the coffee table and it would just smash all of the trackpad. And then, you know, when you're smashing the Siri remote, it means you're paying $60 to get another one. So at least now it should be more durable because there's not anything to really break there. Yeah. The only thing you have to be, these don't come out to like the second half of May. So we'll have to wait for it to see for real. The only thing I'm slightly worried about is whether the trackpad accidentally fires when you want to do the D-pad. Do you know what I mean? Like, just because it's doubling as both, there still might be, if they haven't got the arrangement just right, there still might be people who complain that like, oh, I pick it up and I try to do one thing, but it actually did something else. But fingers crossed, they've got it down.
Yeah. Do you get a free year of Apple TV Plus when you buy this?
No.
No?
Well, you get if you buy the box.
Right. Yeah.
But if you've already had the free year, you don't get another free year, remember?
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
That's the other thing, by the way, just complete tangent. I see a lot of people now on TweetDeck, on the TweetDeck search column, where they've used the TV Plus free trial, they've cancelled, then they've bought an iPad, and obviously on the website, it's like, you get a free year of Apple TV, but you only get it once and no one realizes that. And then they will complain at Apple support, like, you're screwing me out of money on my free year. Like, eventually they're going to just drop the trial and that will go away. But for the time being, it's kind of misleading. But yeah, cool. They literally, like, if all they did was update the box to an A12, I'd have been like fuming. Like, we've waited 4 years and all you did was do that. But the remote change is significant enough that it shows they care enough about the living room to like not let it die away, you know? But
yeah.
I really wish they'd have moved the price a bit. Because a $59 remote, you can get the new Chromecast with Google TV, which is really good. That's cheaper than the remote. So you get the whole and Chromecast stick
and
their remote for less than the cost of the new Siri remote.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's do our last out of the show and then we can carry on with some cool stuff. You said you were hungry. Right. This is Sunbasket. Convenience cooking without sacrificing on quality. That's what Sunbasket is for. If your days are anything like mine, once you've got through waking up, breakfast, work, lunch, the time just flies by and suddenly you're stuck about what to do for dinner with no time for meal prep. It's even easier than ever with Sunbasket to have delicious, nutritional meals delivered direct to your home. Sunbasket fresh and ready meals are just $8.99, good for your body and good for your budget. Sunbasket meals are made with premium quality, real ingredients. That means organic fresh produce and sustainably sourced seafood. Meat is antibiotic and hormone free. Their chefs have won Michelin stars and a James Beard Award. So why not take the night off and let them cook for you? Try delicious meals such as braised beef Penang curry with jasmine rice and sweet peas, shrimp paella with fire-roasted tomatoes and bell peppers, or maybe pappardelle with wilted spinach, sweet peas and fresh ricotta. Fresh and ready meals come freshly prepared. There's no recipe to follow or prep needed. Just put them straight in the oven and they heat up in as little as 6 minutes. All you have to do is heat and eat. It means no mess in your kitchen and far less cleanup than a traditional prepared meal. Sunbasket also have paleo, vegetarian, Mediterranean, and gluten-free options to check out as well. Sunbasket is offering $90 for your first 4 deliveries, including free shipping on your first box when you go right now to sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour, all one word at checkout. That's $90 off. Sunbasket.com, sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour at checkout for $90 off your first 4 deliveries and free shipping on your first box. Once again, sunbasket.com/happyhour and use promo code happyhour.
Yeah, thanks, Sunbasket. I was talking to my aunt in South Florida over the phone this week and she mentioned that she's been using Sunbasket, her and my uncle. And I was thinking, do you listen to the podcast? But I don't think she does. She doesn't. So that was a pretty good endorsement.
iMac.
Yeah. You see, I wrote a thing today about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It takes a lot to get me to write these days. I'll let you take it away.
Okay, okay. So after 8 years of the identical same IMAX chassis design and basically 10 years of the same design from the front, we now have a new iMac. It looks completely different. It's obviously based on M1. They actually introduced it by saying that they were thrilled to introduce a Mac that is built from the ground up around M1. Mm-hmm. So this is obviously referencing the fact that the Macs that they released in the end of last year were exactly the same chassis as the Intel versions. They just swapped out the internals, right, and gave the speed boost. But everyone was waiting to see what can they do now that they've got lower power requirements and just a single on chip system. And what they've basically done is make a big iPad with a stand, right? Yeah. But it doesn't have a touchscreen.
Right. And I was in my guitar lesson today, and my instructor, he has an iMac that he brings in, and I asked him, did you see the new iMacs this week? And he was like, oh, those big iPads on the stand? So yeah, that's what, but real quick, what do you, you know, this has kind of been your thing, is the iMac design is dated and stale. Mm-hmm. There's so much that they could do. I think, you know, before you go, that what we'd envisioned is like the futuristic but modern and realistic version of an iMac could look different than this does. So with that in mind, what do you actually think of the redesign that you've been waiting for so long?
Yeah. I think from the back, it looks great, right? They've got those punchy colors. You can get what, like green, yellow, orange, red, purple, blue, silver. And then you go to the side view and it looks really thin, right? It's like 10 millimeters thin. You've got a sleek stand. And then you go to the front and it does look different from the front, but it doesn't look quite as good as what I was hoping it would, because they've shrunk the bezels on the top and the sides, but you still got a fat chin along the bottom. And they've also decided to remove the logo from the chin. So it's almost more conspicuous now than ever, because they just got this blank gap at the bottom.
Yeah, but that's where the computer is, and it allows them to have color. And they don't do the same color in the back and the front. They've got like more of a vibrant color in the back and then a softer color in the front, so that it's not distracting as much as it could be.
Yeah, and like you say, because that's where the computer is, and that's what everybody says, right? Because they even show on the video, when you look at it, the top half is all screen, so basically the thickness is defined by how big the screen panel is, mm-hmm. and then they've just added on a bit below where they've stuffed the whole computer, mm-hmm. and that's the chin, and that's where the speakers are, that's where the...
And above that's the display and webcam and stuff, but...
Yeah. So, but like, the thickness is basically defined by how thick the display component is, and then they've just stuffed everything else beneath it. Mm-hmm. But I think it would have been better if they made it a bit thicker, and then they didn't need the chin, and they could actually fit all of the computery components behind it.
Yeah.
Because then it would actually be like a big iPad on the stand. Because you look at the iPad, that has super thin bezels, symmetric on all four sides, and mm-hmm. all the computer sits behind the display.
Yeah,
whereas this is like, here's this big screen, and then we basically like slam the computer underneath it.
Yeah, that was my day one reaction too, is I would have preferred it to be thicker and then uniform around all sides.
I'm not even sure why it needs to be thicker at all. Like, the iPad is thinner than what that iMac thing is. Like, the iMac's, the iPad's what, like 7 millimeters thin or something ridiculous? This is 11 millimeters and it has a chin. Like, I don't quite understand
the difference. I don't know. That was my day one reaction. And since then, I've just kind of come around on, I mean, you have to get used to it if you're going to, well, it's what we have. And so if it was
like,
terrible.
It's 100 times better than what we used to have. Like, I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah, it does. I mean, even though it calls back to the previous design, it's not so similar that it's annoying and that it's just like a small change decade over decade. But that was my day one reaction. And then since then, I haven't seen one in person, but of course, but I'm kind of okay with it.
You're warming up to it.
I'm warming up to it. Yeah. I think the stand looks wonderful. The colors are awesome, except for silver. The
white bezel. What do you think about that?
My immediate reaction, again, day one reaction, is that should be black, and that one's harder to warm up to without seeing it in person. Especially, I think in like dark mode and dark apps, that it's gonna pop more, just like a white iPad did when iPads had colored bezels. You could have the option of white or black, but That one I'm going to reserve judgment on until I can see it in person, though, because I'm leaning toward it's the wrong call. But I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I think if they gave me like free choice, I'd say make the whole front black, and then you have the poppy color on the side and the back, right? So you wouldn't bother with the, you know, the desaturated chin color. It'd just all be black. Or maybe it's like black and silver on the front, and then they do the poppy color on the back. But then that makes it look more like the old iMac. So I can see why they wanted to do something like dramatically different.
Mm-hmm.
But white bezel for me, I'm not a fan. Like, it's not even like the contrast between the screen and the bezel. It's just like you see the hole where the webcam is. Like, that's like my number one issue with it. It's like there's a black spot in the top of it where the webcam is, and then the screen isn't borderless, right? So around the actual pixels that light up, you have that black outline, and then you have the white of the actual bezel. So like, it just feels like it should be black because it just makes that stuff blend in more.
Yeah. I tend to think that when you come to the whatever replaces the 27 inch, that they could market those, they could take like a pro route on higher configurations, and that the bezel color distinction could be part of that.
Do you think they would do like still have a chin on the pro ones, or would they do it differently?
I think they still have a chin.
Because yeah. They could. What if they just took like the iMac Pro chassis and just lopped off the chin, and it still had that big bulge in the back, right? So it went all the way back and it gave them space. Especially if they're going to still do like big beefy graphics cards in the pros, I don't think they're going to be able to fit it into something really thin. So
yeah,
like just take the current iMac back design, right? And just basically just use the M1 or the Apple Silicon efficiency to be able to lop off the chin off the bottom of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But well, you know, I don't think that what we saw with the 24-inch, 4.5K display, I don't think that this is what's going to – I think that this is – you know, the 21.5-inch iMac was the good value in terms of like, you know, you're starting out with an all-in-one desktop. But it didn't get a lot of attention. I mean, it went to 4K, and it got, you know, so that's Retina display. But the 27-inch iMac is where the excitement was. And right now, the 24-inch iMac, so the starter iMac now, is the most exciting in the lineup. And then, of course, it'll catch up to the whatever replaces the 27-inch in the future. But all that to say that I think the 24-inch stands on its own, that it's exciting now, and it'll still be exciting when the bigger display comes out. It's just a fine product all on its own.
Yeah, because when they do the, let's say, the 30-inch one, right, for the high-end one, they'll probably do that in, like, more muted colors, maybe more like the iPhone, like what you see on the iPhone 12 versus the iPhone 12 Pro, right? And so then it could be, like, black bezels and stuff. But if you want, like, the fun colors, it's the 24-inch one. Mm. And yep. Then you've got, yeah, like, I think the design... It's growing on me, but I am a bit like let down that they couldn't fulfill the vision of actually getting rid of the chin this time around. Like, that's what I've been imagining
They could have, but they chose not to.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, yeah. I think it'd be more impactful because primarily, right, you're looking from the Mac from the front, right? Like, it looks great when you look at it on the side. It's like when they did the 2012 iMac revision and Phil Schiller was like, look how thin it is on the edge. And they had it at that like exact angle. So yeah. You could see like the 5mm edge and not the massive taper behind it. It's like, well, yeah, but nobody looks at that angle. Like the iMac's looked at from the front and now you've got this like big expanse of just desaturated color there instead. Like,
yeah. The Apple monitor, nothing new there yet. Still rumored, but if they make a version of that, I mean, the Thunderbolt display didn't have a chin, right? It was just the bezels, which were huge. But
yep. But
you can imagine the Apple monitor being the white bezel part without any chin because there's no computer. It's just a display.
Yeah,
that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know if it would look fantastic.
I don't know what color the bezels would be.
Yeah, hopefully black. Like.
I don't know.
When they do the 6-inch MacBook Pro this year,
yeah.
If that's in black bezel, if that's in white bezel, I'm going to be mad.
the MacBook Air used to have the silver bezels until 2018 or so. Yeah. No, I would hope that they would. I mean, black bezel is like by default what you'd think, but I kind of hope that the display would have white bezel so it at least looks exactly like the iMac it's next to.
So it matches, yeah.
Yeah, and have that be the 24-inch. But they've only ever made... As far as you know, my following Apple, the larger display as a standalone, not a the smaller display. They didn't do a 21.5-inch Thunderbolt display, for example.
I'm pretty sure they have had a 24-inch cinema display, but that was like...
That was back when 24-inch was like the equivalent of a 27. It was like...
Right, yeah. And then they went to 30-inch cinema display, and then they went to the 27-inch Thunderbolt display.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not holding my breath for there to be a 24-inch Apple display. I think it'll be, you know, 30 or 32, whatever the new iMac ends up being at the high end. And then, you know, if that's got black bezels, then it would have black bezels, but...
Yeah, and they made it 24 inches, and they did scale the resolution up, unlike the LG Ultrafine 4K, which just made the screen bigger and kept the same.
So this is like this is like ultra ultrafine.
Yeah, so it's 4,480 by 2,520. They call it 4.5K Retina, but I'm thrilled that they just actually made the resolution bigger as well, because when the LG went 4K, sorry, when the LG went to 23.5 inches, and they just made the screen bigger at the same 4K res, it was like pretty rubbish. But yeah, I mean, Apple knows how to do it properly.
It's half a K away from 5K, so it's pretty good.
It does have fans in it. It's, I think it's basically like the 13-inch MacBook Pro internals just spread out across that chin area, right? So they say it's got two small fans in it, but it's basically barely audible when you use it. And, you know, we've seen that play out with the entire M1 line, right?
Yeah.
The webcam is
the best webcam.
The best webcam they've ever put in an iMac, supposedly. But it's a 1080p camera, which is what the iMac Pro already had. Like, the iMac Pro is already 1080p.
But this
the
has got 21-inch
iMac before was 720p. So now it's 1080p.
Yeah.
And they've got the, you know, what they call the studio quality through microwave, which it might not be studio quality, but it does sound better than the old mics they used to have. They made a big deal about the... a speaker system. They call it a 6-speaker system, and it will give you like a Dolby Atmos spatial audio effect. And I think that what they've done in like these 16-inch MacBook Pro speakers, they're pretty impressive. And I'm sure like people have said the iMac Pro speakers were good too. So I bet the speakers do actually sound good in this thing. And
yeah, you can throw your AirPods Max, because now you get spatial audio from your iMac.
Yeah, and like they even do like the HomePod style thing where they've got the bass response nullified out by the opposite vibration, right? So you don't get the thumpy thump. Like, even though the HomePod's getting discontinued, they've obviously taken what they've learned to integrate it into the, you know, into the internal speakers. Ports wise, because it's an M1, right? Like, is it like it's powered by M1? It's not an M1X or anything. It's just exactly the same chip that we've seen before, which is fine in terms of performance. Like, the M1 chip still, you know, destroys all the Intel machines pretty much, apart from the really, really high end 27 inch ones that this machine isn't intended to replace. But it has the same limitations as all the previous M1 laptops. So you can only do one external display. You get two Thunderbolt ports and you get two USB-C ports on the back. So I think this might be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this might be the first time Apple's made a Mac where they have ports that look the same but have run at different speeds.
Sounds right to me, except for like whenever there was... you know, they were the same port, but one was faster, one was slower by a little bit because of, you know, how it was laid out or bandwidth.
Right. Like there was that old MacBook Pro where like the two ports on the left were had higher bandwidth than the ports on the right, but they were all Thunderbolt ports, right?
And yeah,
it was like 20 versus 40, whereas this is like two are Thunderbolt, two are just plain USB-C. And I think they might have made them USB-A, apart from the fact that the way the thickness is, they can't actually have the protrusion of the USB-A connector going in the back.
Yeah,
I don't think
USB-A and SD card would have to have gone on the side, like the headphone jack, because of just how thin the display is.
Are you sad that the SD card slot's gone?
It would be better if it was in the side, but it's not a showstopper, because it's got Thunderbolt and you can plug in a Thunderbolt hub. And then you get, you know, your USB-A and your SD and HDMI and all that stuff. So, and because it's an iMac, it's not a notebook, you know, having a permanently attached, you know, adapter isn't a big deal. I wouldn't like put a dongle on it and then have to, you know, feel for it. I think having a hub is a good way to go. Even if the hub is like the size of the computer, you know, it sits on your desk or whatever. So
yeah.
I'm okay with that. The USB-C ports versus Thunderbolt ports. I mean, I would take two USB-C ports on my MacBook Air if they, you know, they're both Thunderbolt, you know, but if I could have two USB-C ports as well, I think that'd be nice.
Right. Yeah. You like know. That. And that kind of shows that they're at least open to it. Right. And it's not like a strict philosophical, all the ports that look the same must work the same. Like, they've obviously made the concession here, so maybe they could do it on the laptops as well going forward.
Just yeah. And they've removed the power supply from being internal to the iMac to being you have an external power supply, just like when you charge your MacBook, you've got a brick. It's like Apple's, I guess, it's their highest wattage brick now. And cleverly, I mean, we're talking about the ports, they've put Ethernet on that brick with the power. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I thought was like, it reminded me of Ethernet over power. That's like a thing that you can get to like put before you had, you know, mesh Wi-Fi and everything. You could run a line over you could run Ethernet through the power line and like have an adapter on both sides, I think. And it would send the Ethernet over the power line. And so that makes me think that, you know, why don't they have other ports on this thing? Well, Ethernet over power is like a known thing, and that this is probably based on something like that. And so that's what I thought about was, okay, Ethernet can go over a power connection, whereas I don't know that HDMI or USB, I don't know if any of those would.
Yeah, and like it's not a port, it's like a magnet thing, right? Like mm-hmm. The connector is like a magnet that just plops onto the back of the iMac screen. So it, like one alternative they could have done, I guess, is had like a USB-C port that's just for power and you just like plug it in instead.
That would be no good, yeah.
But they've got a cool little magnet thing that goes bloop, bloop, and they don't call it MagSafe because obviously it's not like protecting you from anything. It's just they had to do it that way because they can't have a traditional plug because, again, it's too thin on that axis. And the power connector is color matched on the cable, so you don't have white cables. You have the green cable, the blue cable, the yellow cable, which is nice. Similarly, you also have color matched keyboards, so they have all the accessories in the same colors as the iMacs themselves. The keyboard has key switches. They have switched out some of the keys on the keyboard, so now you have an emoji key, you have a spotlight key, you have a do not disturb
just
key.
Like the M1 notebooks.
Just right at the laptops, yep. Mm-hmm. And out of left field, they even got a magic keyboard with Touch ID button.
Yeah. So if you get the $1,299 iMac, you don't get that. And you don't have as many color options. I think there's three or four that aren't there. But if you get the $1,499 model, then you go from, what is it, two Thunderbolt ports on the $1,299? And then...
Yeah, the bonus of the plain USB ports, yeah.
Yeah. So the $1,499, you get two more. You get two more ports on this USB-C. Your magic keyboard comes with Touch ID as the configuration, and you can opt to have it be magic keyboard with numpad, so you have the wide boy, or you can have just the narrow one that we all like. And either one will have Touch ID, and either one will be color matched to your machine. So it's like, I guess, it isn't like all the way color. It's like, is it white keycaps? And then they've got the bottom parts are color matched to the front of
your iMac.
Yeah,
it's like the desaturated color from the chin that they share.
Yeah, and the same thing with the Magic Mouse 2. It's still the white top, but it's got the aluminum part is now color matched. And the Magic Trackpad the same way. It's a white top, but it's got the color matched parts. And it even comes with a lightning cable because that's how you pair your and charge your Magic Keyboard and Trackpad and mouse. And this time, it comes with a color matched lightning cable and it's lightning to USB-C
because and it's braided.
And it's braided. That's what I was going with. Is wasn't it rumored that like the iPhone was going to come with this thing mm-hmm. and it ends up being for the iMac?
Yep.
Yeah, I love that. And they're in college. That's awesome.
Yeah, I hope they sell those cables separately eventually.
Yeah, I bet they won't.
I love how like the Touch ID on the keyboard thing was like a persistent idea that the entire community was talking about like 5 years ago. It's like,
since 2016.
Put a Touch ID button on the keyboard. Just put a Touch ID button on the keyboard. And then Face ID came along and then slowly everyone forgot that, oh yeah, we wanted them to put Touch ID on the keyboard. And out of left field today, they're like, we'll put Touch ID on the keyboard.
Yeah, and it's because it's M1 and obviously they could have put, just like they do with the security chips in the Intel Macs before, they could have done their own chip for Touch ID, but they didn't want to, I guess. So this is part of M1, and the Touch ID keyboard works with any M1 Mac. So you can, it only comes with an iMac, but you can use it with a MacBook Air or Mac Mini or MacBook Pro. And if you use your MacBook Air, like in clamshell mode, then with a display, that's kind of cool. But you won't have it to use with your iMac in that case. And there's no like easy switching. So that's just kind of a, you know, a little bonus. But I all of these things, I mean, the number one, when you go on the iMac page, the number one feature that they show you is color. They're like, so first off, color. And that's, to me, like,
the and way they show it from the side constantly because that's where it looks the best.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put my, yeah. Seriously, when I saw the way that the back is a different color than the front and how it's saturated, I thought, you know, for the first time, I think I might, when I put together a new office space, have it be where I go behind the iMac and like it faces, you know, out like so many other, you know, display or work iMacs do. But yeah, it's cool. You can't tell, I'm very excited about this. And
I'm not as excited, but I think it's like, just because in my head I've been imagining like an iPad Pro that's 24 inches, right? And
yeah.
The addition of that chin space kind of lets it down a little bit. Like it's not as striking as when they unveiled the 2018 iPad Pro at that October event, right? And we went from the 2017 iPad Pro to the 2018, and it was like symmetric bezels that are really thin on all sides. It's like, wow. And then you've got this, which is like, kind of,
mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, it's so thin though that like I was thinking, take this to the coffee shop, but no. but it looks
that. And again, remember the iPad Pro screen is still better in other ways too, because it's high refresh rate and it's got a touch screen, obviously, and it's got all that stuff. And as we talk about in a sec, they even added an even more advanced screen to the iPad Pro.
Yeah,
this is just
but this does have True Tone and it is mm-hmm. Retina. You can't get the nano texture option on the 24 inch. Certainly it'll come to the 30 or 32 inch. They lowered the price on the iMac. I think it's like 500 and it went down a little bit for the nano texture, but it's the same on the Apple Pro Display XDR still. This is what I thought.
Oh, and they do still sell the old iMacs if you look for them. They still sell them all.
Okay.
In 20, like it's not like the M1s where they stop selling the low end and they, you know, only sell the high end Intel ones. You can still buy like the 21 inch iMac with a spinning hard drive if you want to.
Sorry. I'm really excited about this. What I wrote in my story today is, you know, kind of my first exposure to an iMac, and it was in 1999 or 2000, and I was 9 or 10. And my granddad, he had to buy a home computer because it was required at the college where he taught that he had to have internet access at home for email. And so he went to a local computer store in Georgia, and they had a poster of the iMacs in different colors, you know, all around. And that caught my attention as a 9-year-old. And it was like, I hope he gets one of those. And of course, he got like a boring plastic gray Hewlett Packard PC. But that was like my first exposure to the colored iMacs. And then when I actually could afford my own iMac, you know, or Mac at all, it was 2009 when I was going to college. And by then, the iMac was silver, the Mac was silver, the MacBook Pro was silver, and all that stuff. So this is the first opportunity in my lifetime to buy a colored iMac, and I'm thrilled. The color that I'm going for is going to be the orange color, which fortunately I want the 14-9 model because it was not in the 12-9 model. But it just, to me, the orange, it's the one that speaks to me. And I've been talking to like friends about, you know, since the news came out, like 2 hours after the event, I talked to a designer friend and I was like, hey, did you see the new iMacs? And she was like, no. And so she went to apple.com and she was just like, these are stunning. I can't believe this. Like, I have to have one now. And then it was like, the next thing was like, all these colors, what am I going to get? And like her answer was, I want like the green one, or, you know, cause it's like, aquamarine blue, or, you know, kind of minty on one side and then aquamarine on the other. And I was thinking, I was looking at them and, I was just like orange, and they didn't do an iPad Air in orange. Like that's different. Yeah. And I love that, you know, I've got a LaSai orange drive that I would connect to it. It's got like my Logic, studio in. And then, I like the callback to, like, to me, it's like Space Shuttle orange or NASA astronaut flight suit orange. So it just has that vibe that I like. So
And despite spanning like the rainbow, I feel like all the colors look good, you know? Like, yeah. I don't think there's one that's like stupid.
The only thing I have an opinion, well, besides silver, I know some people don't like the colors, and so get silver if you're getting an iMac. The pink one. So pink is the color. The back is, I think, certainly red. And so if you wanted a red iMac, like you can do a red iPhone, et cetera, then it's officially called pink, and the front is pink. So you couldn't do like a red on the front, red on the back. it's pink on the front, red on the back, to my eyes. And that was the one thing where I thought, okay. So, on the first day I was thinking, I think I'll just get one like casually whenever they're around and not order one, you know, in the same way that I'm not going to like order the Apple TV or AirTags. I'm just going to like walk into a shop and buy some when they're in stores. I think with the iMac, I might order it and with enthusiasm. And the big thing is like, okay, so.
Do you have a desk for it yet?
No, I don't. I have a music stand that I use. I use either my living room table or a music stand with like my piano chair. it's been minimalist since I've moved, but I would certainly get a desk for this. But thinking about it, it's like, okay, so I love the MacBook Air. I'm content with this thing. And I've been thinking like, I'm always going to use the MacBook Air more than I use an iMac. And that's just the truth, is because it's portable in the first place. I move around a lot, you know, I go places throughout the day. I think that's not going to change, but what the iMac would be good for, I think, is, okay, this is the place where I always have external storage and large capacity, and I have a 4 terabyte drive connected to it all the time. So then I can download all of my photo library locally, have, you know, all of the Logic instruments local. And I know that the M1 performance is going to be just fine. And with 8 gigabytes of memory, I'm not even, you know, interested in 16 gigabytes of memory, because I've never had an issue with this MacBook Air. And so I kind of know what to expect with this iMac as well. Yeah, so I'm happy, and orange will be in my future.
Yeah, if I was going to get one, I'd probably get the blue one, because I think that's good, probably like the color preference.
Good to know that's not silver.
But I'm not going to get one because I'm getting the 16 inch MacBook Pro. So that's that. If you are going to order it on launch day, that you can order from tomorrow, and they come out in May. Finally, Spring Loaded event, which really was loaded, to be fair, it is the new iPad Pro lineup. The biggest deal here is that they put the M1 chip in it, which I guess is the A14X, but they called it M1. So last fall, when we were like, hey, they've got a Mac chip, it's called M1, they were like, look, Apple's branding is known for being completely arbitrary and annoying. So what we'll do is, in the spring, we'll put the M1 chip in the iPad Pro, just so nobody knows what the M means anymore.
What's the M mean? Mac? No, it doesn't. Well, it does.
M is meaningless.
They're signaling that this iPad has the power of a Mac, because it literally is the same chip, you know, processor and everything, as what's in an iMac or MacBook Pro or Mac Mini or MacBook Air. I think that just goes to show that, you know, how different do we have an A14 yet? Is that in the iPhone?
Yeah, the A14 is in the iPhone.
Yeah. How does that compare then to the M1?
The M1's a lot faster.
Okay.
Because the M1 has twice as many GPU cores and CPU cores. So the A14 is an 8-core chip, but it's 4 CPU cores, 4 GPU cores, okay. And the M1 is 8 CPU cores, 8 GPU cores.
Is that characteristic of what an A14X would have been without?
Yeah, probably. Like, usually, when they did the X's, they only did the GPU, so they like, you know, amp the GPU, CPU the same. Mm-hmm. But yeah, essentially, it's basically, and if they'd called it A14X, nobody would blink an eyelid, because it's literally the same idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the fact that Apple Silicon's so far ahead now, they like have like ridiculously fast tablets, ridiculously fast laptops, ridiculously fast iMacs.
Yeah, this is really good. I mean, this iPad Pro hardware wise is fantastic. It's you know, they didn't make any changes to the to iPad OS yet, but this is great hardware for, like, you know, if the iPad already can replace your computer, or, you know, serves your needs as a computer, as your main machine, you can get some serious specs out of this new iPad. So, for example, up to 2 terabytes of storage. So that's just like the iMac. You can get up to 2 terabytes of storage. And you know, some people like wondering, what is all that for? If iPad was like my only computer, like and I could fit my work into it in a way that made me happy, I would love to have a 2 terabyte iPad. Like, have my photo library be local, have a lot of movies be local. I would just treat it the exact same way I treat a Mac, you know, it's the same media that would be there. So I would love that, even though they're super pricey. And then the RAM, you know, they didn't announce the RAM whenever they had the first 1 terabyte iPad Pro, mm-hmm. but it had more RAM than the lesser storage models, right? And then
The 1 terabyte had 6 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, and then with that was 2018. And then in 2020, they did 6 across the board. And then with the 2021 iPad Pro, they're doing 8 gigabytes across the board, unless you get 1 terabyte or 2 terabytes. And just because that's a pricier model and you're obviously very serious about your iPad, you get 16 gigabytes of RAM, which is more than my MacBook Air, more than my future iMac. That's just wild. That these are
yeah, and they even said the iPad gets 16 gigs of RAM, which I think is the first time ever they've said like RAM specs for an iPad, like officially. We always have to wait for like the teardowns and stuff. Like
exactly.
They are hammering home, this is the M1 chip. It's so fast. It's, you know, it's Mac quality, you know?
Uh-huh. Yep. But it is like it's a single port Mac, if you were to call it a Mac, because it has one port. And that is now Thunderbolt, which can drive the Apple Pro Display XDR. You get full 6K resolution for the first time. And then I think the big thing that they were showing was also, you know, if you're importing large video files or moving large, you know, files from your iPad to a drive, you get Mac transfer speeds because it's Thunderbolt. And again, like if I were serious about the iPad and like I wanted like the best iPad on the market and it was like what I lived on, I would love that it now has Thunderbolt, you know, instead of just USB-C speeds. So, that's really cool. I like that a lot.
And the it comes with 5G.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
That's
yes.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. If you get the cellular model, it's 5G. So that's the game changer, which you can't do in a Mac. So that's really cool. You know, I think this is the first great use of 5G because, you know, if the Mac hasn't gotten 5G yet, it hasn't gotten cellular at all. It's in the iPhone and they show things like downloading movie files very large, you know, very fast. Or doing things like the mobile doctor workflow where you can get very large charts very soon and 3D models. I think, you know, and these are all like kind of like niche enterprise uses. I think 5G on an iPad, you just want like a fast computer with fast internet built into it. Love it on a Mac. Having that on the iPad is very good in a way I think that's more meaningful than even the phone.
And maybe it opens the possibility for a future like MacBook Pro or something to offer cellular because it's like, yeah. It's the Mac chip, you know, it can mm-hmm. do cellular. But
yep.
I mean, I guess technically the cellular modems are separate from the system on the chip, but clearly they can work together on that, you know?
Yeah.
Interestingly, they gave it an upgraded front camera. So it's a 12 megapixel front camera that's wide angle now. And they have this thing called center stage, which basically does like virtual panning around the room. So as you move around the room or someone else comes into frame, it can like zoom out and pan around to try and fit them all in.
Yeah, it's I call that Facebook portal mode.
Yeah. You know what? You know where center stage might come in useful, Zach? What if you had an iPad that you put on a robotic arm?
They've done it. They're there.
Yeah. I mean, like that might even be where this feature came from. They were like prototyping an iPad on an arm and they're like, wow, we should just put this on the iPad.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good demo on Facebook portal, a thing that no one wants or should get. And so to have it on the iPad is good now.
Another like webcam feature that the Macs don't get.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. We have a 4K front camera with 12 megapixel ultra wide mode, and then the Mac's like, how about a 1080p webcam?
Yeah.
The display on the 12.9 inch one is mini LED, as widely rumored. They call it Liquid Retina XDR, because of course they do, but it's a mini LED panel, right? And it's actually really impressive. Like, they boast basically the same specs as the Pro Display's XDR. So you get 1600 nits of peak brightness, 1000 nits sustained brightness, exactly the same as Pro Display XDR. It has 2500 dimming zones, so 2500 individual areas of light that can be turned on and off for the backlight. Whereas the Pro Display XDR, despite it being, what, like three times the size, only has 576 dimming zones. Mm-hmm. So they've packed a load more zones into a really small space, so you should be able to simulate like OLED black levels really well on that distance. Like some big TVs only have like 500 dimming zones, so to get like 2,500 of them in an iPad is like seriously impressive. And I don't quite know how they achieve that either, because like the Pro Display XDR part of the reason they said it was like so thick and stuff, and it's got those, you know, holes drilled in the back of it. They're like, it generates so much heat because we have to make the screens really bright and everything. And it's like, and then they've got this super thin iPad that can do the exact same contrast ratio performance in the same thinness as it's always been, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's half a millimeter thicker, but you know what? I'll forgive them that.
Yeah. And it's only, like you said, it's only the 12.9 inch model, not in the 11 inch. That's still just LED backlit LCD.
Fingers crossed, yeah, they're going to put the Liquid Rain XDR display on the MacBook Pro.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's rumored. That'd be nice.
Why not?
Why not?
Go for it. Can't you do a ransom and find out?
I mean, think for a second how good this iPad Pro screen is, right? It's high res, it's like 3K or whatever. It has 2500 dimming zones, mini LED, and it runs at 120 frames per second. Like, it's like the best display Apple ships at the moment. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's super affordable too. I mean, so
raised $10.99, which is $100 more than
they raised the price for it.
I mean, it's pretty good though. Like, if you want like a super good tablet, like, you've got no better option than, mm-hmm, if you just look spec for spec over the 2018 model, it's pretty far forward, you know? Like, they've given it a lot of stuff, but practically the software's holding it back, right?
And if you upgrade from 2018 or before, you get LiDAR.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, another thing that you won't ever use.
Yeah.
Like, there's plenty of time for us to debate the stupidness of iPadOS, but like, this iPad,
it will get better in time.
Eventually.
And you can't change the hardware after the fact. You can only make a new version. But the software on this will eventually be good. It has to be, surely, right? But because the hardware is just, it was already great, and now it's like unbelievable.
The hardware's on like a bullet train, and the software's like a horse-drawn carriage, you know? Like, it's just very different tracks.
Yeah, it's something else.
If you're just doing one app, it's great. And if you're doing photo editing or video editing in LumaFusion, you can take full advantage of the M1 chip. You'll saturate all the GPU cores. Boom, right? You're doing stuff. But if you're not doing like, you know, photography or drawing, you know, digital art or like video editing, like, you don't need to bother. If you've got 2018 iPad Pro, you'd be perfectly fine carrying on with that.
Yeah. All of my tattoos start on a 12.9 inch iPad with the bezel, you know, the previous one from what, 2016 or 15.
Oh, the 2017 one, yeah.
They use Procreate and they trace with that and then make the template for the marking. Yeah, Magic Keyboard now available in white. Don't know if it's a good idea or not. I think it looks really cool. It's fresh. It's different. Here's why I'm curious. So the first one it was definitely made for the space gray iPad because the metal hinge matched the iPad space gray. And if you had a silver iPad, it was fine, but it didn't match the metal. It was a different color. And now you can get one that has the same color hinge if you have a silver iPad. But you also get, you know, the white case material and white keycaps and everything. I think it looks really nice. I'm not sure if it's going to get dirtier than the darker color, though, because the darker one, that is so bad. Like, it's not like you stain it, but if you have ever, I don't know, had moisture in your body, like it's exposed in your environment, you have to put it down because it stands up on its own. And so that has to touch the surface. But if it touches any surface that's, you know, has any kind of, you know, film on it, I don't know, anything that can stick to it, it does. And it's really hard to clean too. Like it gets so dirty. And I'm curious if the white one doesn't have that problem as bad, or if it still gets the same dirty, but because it isn't like, because it's a lighter color, you don't notice as much. Kind of like how the white Tesla seats turn out to be fine mostly. So I'm curious, but realistically, probably it will get really dirty.
Mm-hmm. And the actual keyboard is like identical. I don't think they changed anything about it.
Yeah, no changes.
And even those Apple Pencil rumors, like a third generation Apple Pencil, that doesn't come to pass. It's the same pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's the iPad Pro. Crazy good hardware. Waiting for software improvements as usual.
And I have a lot of enthusiasm for this generation of iPad, because even if you get the 11 inch, you don't get the new display type, but you get Thunderbolt and you get the same stats where you can get up to 16 gigabytes of RAM and 2 terabytes mm-hmm. of storage. you know, 5G, center stage, all this stuff. That's really good stuff. You know, for $800, that's kind of a deal now. You know, I remember thinking before 11-inch $700-$800 is kind of high. Now it feels like a pretty good value. It's when you pay for the Magic Keyboard when it becomes to be kind of a bad value. But
yeah, then it just becomes more expensive than a MacBook Air again. You're like,
right? Yeah.
If I actually need to get stuff done, I'm probably buying the Air.
Once the OS is sorted it out, then it's great. It's like Mac compatible. It's like Mac capable plus more.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like the iPad is leading the way on Apple's hardware. Like the iMac is an iPad on a stand, right? But then it's not as good because the screen's not as good, right? Like then the laptops are running iPad chips essentially, just with a different operating system on. Like, and I don't think they, just because they've called it M1, I don't think they're going to be like, surprise, we're going to run Mac OS on your iPad. Like, I don't think it's going to happen. But
yeah,
that's stupid in one way. And I don't think that's why they changed the name. I think they changed the name because they wanted to impress. Like, they've got so much brand value and, like, accreditation accrued to the M1 name because it got, like, stunning reviews in the last year. They came to this one, they're like, why should we lose all that and call it an A14X? We should just double down and say, look, this is a computer. This is M1.
Yeah. And by the way, like, how cool is it that the chip, the same chip is in the MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, Mac Mini, iMac, and now iPad. And it isn't because it's like terrible. It's because it's really good.
Right. Like the low end 21.5-inch iMac before, it would use like laptop CPUs, right? Like,
yeah.
And that was like, all right, but you know, this thing is like MY, it smokes the floor with it, like hands over fist. They were like, it's 4 times faster, it's 5 times faster. It's like, yeah, because the old laptop Intel CPUs were kind of rubbish.
Yeah.
And now now with today's announcements, they basically finished the M1 products, right? Because everything that's left is all like iMac Pro, MacBook Pro, like the high-end ones, right? So that's what will be coming with the M2 or the M1X, whatever they're going to call that, which is also...
And at that point, I think it gets a little bit more awkward that there's the M1 and the iPad Pro, because you've got like, you know, all the higher end stuff has the better, you know, whatever, M whatever. And then I started to wonder, well, why isn't there an iPad Pro with the M whatever that is an M1 if it's, you know, better performance? And is it
just maybe that's what's coming in 2022.
Is it just a matter of time? The only thing I was disappointed about with the iPad is, I there was no reason to believe it's coming, but I hope for battery life changes, because right now it's always been 10 on Wi-Fi and 9 on cellular. And, you know, of course with the laptops you get like 18, you know, hours. It's wild. And so I did hope that the iPad would through some miracle get better battery life, or, you know, jump up. If you went from 10 to 12 on Wi-Fi, we all praised the MacBook Air when it had 10 hours or 12 hours on an Intel chip. So if you could do that on the iPad, that'd be cool. But I guess that's something that, you know, they've got to really focus on that if they want to do it.
And like the reason the laptops can do it is because they've got, you know, they're just way thicker and they have that whole bottom case, which is full of battery.
Well, yeah, right? your footprint your footprint's a lot bigger.
Like, maybe they could do something where, like, a future Magic Keyboard put batteries in the Magic Keyboard part, you know, like recharge
make it worth this price.
And the other thing with the iPad Pro battery life is like, yeah, it gets 10 hours if you're doing like, you know, text editing and Twitter and stuff. But if you're doing what they always show, like video editing stuff, the battery drains like half the time. Like you get like 5 hours or whatever, which is nowhere near as good as what you can get on the laptops. So.
Yeah.
Hopefully someday they can make the battery life improve too. Yeah, but
yep. So so just to recap here, you know, so relieved that AirPods or AirTags are announced. So relieved that there's a new Apple TV coming. The most exciting thing is the remote. You know, good that the processor is better because it's A12. I know you said, you know, there's nothing that Apple TV is going to do that's going to need anything more than A12. I still would have liked if they did an A14 in the box, because, you know, as like the iPhone video quality improves and you want AirPlay to catch up with what, you know, the video quality, I think that'll be a thing in the future. Cause that was one of the things they called it this time, was the iPhone camera's gotten better than what we can AirPlay with the previous Apple TV. But the remote is so exciting. Like, can't wait for it. You even get the new remote in the control center tile. It's not the new remote. I will buy the orange iMac, the 14.9 model. And I have great enthusiasm for both iPads, especially the 12.9-inch, but I won't buy either of those.
I'm going to buy an AirTag, and maybe I'll just buy the Siri mode, but if I'm going to spend $60 on the Siri mode, I might as well just upgrade the box as well. So I'll get a 4K, because the thing at the moment is I'm going to plug my new Apple TV 4K into a 1080p TV. So it feels a bit redundant, but I'm not going to buy an Apple TV HD, so...
Yeah. Well, Apple does say that gaming is better on the Apple TV because of the A12.
Breaking news.
Yes.
The new Siri remote doesn't have a gyroscope or an accelerometer in it.
So what does that mean? What do we lose there?
So if you wanted to do like the games, you know, like the games on Apple TV that are like Wii Remote games.
No one did that.
Yes. Well, my sister actually does play the tennis game sometimes, so
okay,
she's going to be sad. So now, if you have the new Siri remote, you won't actually be able to play those games, which I'm is sorry. A bit of a bummer. And I mean, they made it so chunky, like you feel like they could have just left the accelerometer in it, but no can do.
Sorry about your loss there.
Still, Siri remote, fantastic. There we go.
Yeah.
And this is what they say. By ordering both the Apple TV 4K and an AirTag.
Okay.
Tomorrow/today, depending when you're listening to the episode.
Awesome. Here's what they say about the A12. Gameplay gets more realistic with the A12 Bionic, which powers smoother motion and greater responsiveness. So I just want to put that out there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to play games on the Apple TV, you can use a controller, right?
Like, yes. Like or your iPhone. Xbox
controller,
or an iPhone.
Or an iPhone, indeed.
PS5 controller, Xbox controller, iPhone. Yeah, good stuff.
So in summary, great event.
Yeah, it was
like generally not sarcastically, like a lot of stuff, a lot of surprises. iPad Pro is cool, iMac is pretty cool, apart from the chin.
iMac is great. I have no complaints about the iMac.
Apple TV, fantastic. Siri remote, specifically purple iPhone. Wow, that came out of left field. Sweet.
can't wait to read the purple iPhone reviews.
And with that, do you want to close out the show?
Yeah, I guess so. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us together at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZac. That's APOLLOZAC. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at?
BZAMayo.
Nice. And this week I turned my domain name, ApolloZac.com, into like a landing page for everything from 9to5 Mac to Space Explorer to all the socials. So
is this a continuing campaign to get more followers? Is that?
Yeah.
I need a web presence. Go.
All right. I haven't caught up with you yet since the last time that I told everyone to unfollow you. So I think this week the call to action is if you see BZAMayo on Twitter, report as spam and block. So. All right, everyone, we'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.